Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Pony Development Sync for June 2nd, 2020. I almost said 1972 because, of course, it's 1972. Clearly not 2020. Otherwise, why would I think that? I'm Sean Allen. I'm your host today. Andy Charlie is not hosting today. I'm going to have folks go around and introduce themselves so you know their voices. Sylvan, could you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Sylvan Clash.
Gordon, please introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Gord Tischer.
Joe, please introduce yourself.
Hello, I'm Joe.
Theo, please introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Theo.
And we have someone who I don't believe I've ever met before, but was on the call previously, just sort of lurking. Robert Johnson, if you're available too, you want to unmute your mic and say hi for a minute?
I am Robert.
Cool. Nice to meet you, Robert. All right. And that is everybody who will be who should be speaking today, possibly, who's on here right now. Joe.
You introduced the race condition, Sean.
How?
Oh, just by you got your state for who's on the call at the start of the call, but they may speak later and your state may be out of it. Sorry. Bad race condition joke.
You can't make race condition jokes to me right now. And not for a while. Just it's too painful. Anyway, Lord, I wish this was written in Pony. Anyway, we're going to jump right into RFCs, which will be kind of a jumping off point. Joe, I'm going to let you lead this one. On the RFC repo, we're going to be discussing issue 2815, that is formal viewpoint adaptation, and in particular, George Steed's formal model for viewpoint adaptation from his was that a thesis, Sylvan, or is there
it was a master's book.
Okay, for there. Joe, and I'm going to let you take it away and give background and everything else for anybody who might not be familiar with it and the related soundness whole issue.
I apologize.
Yeah.
We're on the RFC repo?
Oh, sorry.
No, yeah,
oh, sorry.
Say,
oh,
just
sorry.
To make it clear, this is the Pony C repo.
Oh, this is the Pony C. Yep.
2815.
I misspoke because it says RFC in the title. Thank you, Joe. Thank you. All right.
So, in the Zula, Jason Carr, shout out, very helpful, very sharp in finding this issue. He managed to find a soundness hole that I kind of worked with him and helped narrow down to actually a couple different problems in the current Pony compiler. So one of them is directly related to this RFC and the difference between, I mean, just to sum it up, one variation of this exploit uses our current viewpoint adaptation rules to extract a tran from a tran arrow tran, and within that, let's see, let's make some right. Anyway, the gist of it is that George Steed found correctly in his paper, and Jason Carr found correctly in this reproduction that he came up with in Pony, that extracting a tran from a tran arrow tran is not sound, in that the issue, which is 3571, is the soundness hole issue that he opened after some discussion in Zulip. 3571 shows, let me quickly edit that.
Sorry,
add syntax.
I'm confused that this code compiles.
It does not. Or rather, sorry, it does. Yes, it does. Go ahead.
Right. So, don't get me wrong, George's work is top-notch. Always worth talking about George's work. but I'm a little bit confused that this compiles. That seems like a compiler bug. In the, in order to use extraction, so atren being extracted from htren, right, means you have to pass the tren reference to extract a tren as the receiver, right?
Yeah, which is, so that's the other variation, but yes.
So that means htren should be out of scope, and by the time hval equals consume htren runs, htren should already be out of scope.
Yeah, so I think what you're pointing out, so there's actually two snippets here. You see there's two pony snippets there. They look nearly identical.
Yep.
The former one is, as you, I think, are pointing out, it is a bug, a compiler bug in automatic receiver recovery.
Yep.
In that it should not be possible, or this is my diagnosis anyway, you can tell me if I'm wrong. It should not be possible to call htran.extractatran and assign that return value because the return value is not sendable. And because the return value is not sendable, you can't use automatic receiver recovery.
I think it's absolutely fine. I don't see a problem with it. The problem. Wait a minute. Htren is being actually completely pulled out in this one.
The top one or the bottom one?
The top one. The top one, it's being replaced. So there's never mind. I misunderstood the top one. The top one, htren is being assigned to and replaced and returned.
Yeah.
Therefore, htren no longer references htren. Therefore, when we freeze it into the hval, and we get aval. Aval does not alias htren. They're separate objects.
They're the same object because look at the constructor. Htran is given a new instance of A, and A box is assigned to the same Htran. When you call extract Htran, you're getting out the original Htran, and then now the new Htran no longer points to the same object. But you have now in main.create, you have Htran, the original Htran, and you are later able to pull out via A box
after
freezing the A val.
I got it. Yep. That makes sense.
And so my diagnosis so of the top. Worse.
Sorry. No. Go ahead.
My diagnosis of the top, this top reproduction is actually, it's not related to George Steed's viewpoint adaptation. This is related to automatic receiver recovery because you shouldn't be able to call a fun ref with a tran receiver unless all the return values and all the arguments and return value are sendable. In this case, the return value is not sendable; it's a tran.
That's right. That's the core problem. Totally.
Yeah. So that's the bug in this top one. Yep. Now the bottom one, like when I pointed that out, Jason Carr came back and says, "Okay, but I can inline it, right? I can do destructive assignment and get rid of the extract a tran method and do destructive assignment at that." In main.create and kind of do the same exploit, but now rather than exploiting receiver recovery, this is where it's exploiting the viewpoint adaptation or the issue that is fixed in George Steed's work.
Yeah, I agree with that. The second one is straightforward George work.
Yeah, so what I've kind of suggested in my write-up at the bottom is that we treat this issue ticket as fixing the automatic receiver recovery bug. And then I added a note in George Steed's, or not his issue ticket, but our ticket for adopting his rules. I added a note in that one that there is now a soundness hole associated with that, which, you know, might raise priority or whatever. It's not just a improvement, but also fixes a soundness hole.
Yeah, definitely. Nice work. So I'm looking at this
thing.
So, I'm just sort of having a look at this. It's possible to fix the second example and possibly This is something that I looked at before, and possibly all instances of sound as holes from that work without implementing that work, I think. Okay. Because I think all of the instances where there's a sound as whole have to do with transition. And I think it has to do with trin arrow types. And that the trin arrow types can be weakened to eliminate all soundness holes.
Yeah, so just pick the less the less permissive, yeah, the weaker version of the two tables from George's work.
That's right.
And that would be sound, although it might break existing code if anything is relying on tran arrow types.
If anything breaks sound, so should be broken. And would be broken by George's work anyway. Because,
well, not if you're... Okay, go ahead.
You would need a bunch of... You would need changes in annotation so in order to make George's work useful. So in my opinion, you know, saying that, oh, you've got the weaker thing is not that far off. So in this particular example, a trend would have to be a box. Because trend arrow, trend would be box instead of trend.
Real quick, just looking at the two tables from George's work. So tran, and it's also confused a bit by the ephemerals being part of the origin.
Yeah. That's the part of the work that...
The least permissive that he has here is val and not box.
But it's not val. Right. Necessarily. I mean, actually, you could say it's val. That would be fine. Actually, could you do that? If you actually, yeah, you could.
Because you took the one writable reference.
You took it out. So val works. Yep, that's absolutely right. That's nice. That's significantly better than box.
Yeah, and that would probably break less code. If anything is relying on tran arrow tran, it's probably for getting it out as a val, because that's like the one purpose of tran anyway.
Yep, it's literally what it does.
So, okay. Now, one more interesting thing that I found related to this. With George Steed's extracting viewpoint adaptation rules, one thing that's interesting is that I don't see a way in the current pony type system to represent a method that just wraps destructive assignment for a field in a generic way that could work for any capability.
In terms of being able to outline that code? As yes. In the opposite of inline? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
because we don't do that like varying reifications of fun ref like we do a fun box. Uh-huh. And also the ephemeral matters, and you're taking away the ephemerality when you go into a method. We don't have any ISO hat receivers. We always have to have ISO receivers.
Yeah. It's one of the, I agree. So the inability to outline anything dealing with ephemerality is a core problem with the type system, because it's specifically referring to things for which a name has been unbound. And in order to outline, you need a bound name.
Yeah, unless you could somehow like guarantee it only references a this dot exactly once, or at most once, I guess. And it consumes it at that point.
I mean, that's what ISO does, right? ISO gives you that exact single reference guarantee.
Yeah.
But there is no alias tracking otherwise. We're introducing a name by outlining, right? It's just a core issue. Don't get me wrong, that issue exists whether or not you can name ephemeral types in any type system, right? But essentially you have to introduce a different way of dealing with alias tracking that is not binding alias tracking to ephemerality. Because that's the core purpose of alias tracking in Pony, right? Is it's not of ephemerality in Pony. It's not really about the ephemerality. It's about alias tracking. It's being able to say, okay, we can do alias tracking statically, and yeah, okay, it only really matters for certain kinds of reference capabilities, but we can do it statically with no dynamic cost. And you need a separate way to do it.
Yeah.
But it's a really good
option. I ran across it in working on the Mare compiler because the property like fields are always wrapped in like getter and setter methods. So like the field is like hidden behind that. And so the automatically generated setter method that I create has to have this like sort of special case annotation attached to it within the compiler that says this one is okay to, you know, deal with this ephemeral in this way because I say so.
Right.
Yeah. I was dissatisfied with that answer, but it kind of works for now. And I guess what you're saying is that I have to be either satisfied with that answer or change almost everything.
Sadly, yes. And I would suggest probably the thing to do is to say, actually, that particular kind of outlining simply isn't possible in that if alias tracking works in that way.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to introduce a hole.
Okay, well, it doesn't make me happy, but it's the facts of life, so, you know.
The other thing is there are other ways to approach alias tracking, and you know, that's
an interesting stuff. Yeah, I'll need to dig deeper into that at some point, but this is like good enough for me for now. Anyway, this was the thing that I think Sean wanted me to cover, plus that little extra bit I tacked on the end. So I'll yield back to Sean.
But before we quite do that, I would suggest that we fix this immediately, not in the sense of time-wise, but in the immediate sense of fixing it, fixing the recover rule. That should be really straightforward. That shouldn't be hard to fix. And weakening trend to val instead of trend.
Oh yeah, thanks. I'll take that note into the ticket.
Are there two issues for the two different things at this point, Joe?
I didn't create a new issue. What I did was said that this ticket, so I edited the OP by Jason, and then I basically within the comment I said, for this ticket, we should ignore the viewpoint adaptation thing. But I guess with Sylvan's suggestion, I think we should not, you know, wait for RFC 59. We should do what he said. And I don't think we need two separate tickets.
I would like to see two separate tickets. It's two separate problems, I think.
And then the third problem is allowing stronger claims when using extraction with George's work. Also, I don't know if I said this explicitly, but Jason Carr, nicely done.
He also is working on trying to find a way to remove hat from the type system.
Extra bonus. That's excellent.
I'm very excited to have him do both this and other things, so that's great.
So could you break it apart into a couple different issues, Joe? I don't feel qualified to do it and have them not be factually incorrect in some subtly important way.
Sure, yeah. I don't really want to break it up, but I will. I think my opinion would be as fine to stay as one, but yeah, I'll go ahead and do that for you.
So we can fix one of these problems and still have the other one be around, right?
Yeah, but you also said trigger. You put a triggers release tag on it, right? So it's like mm-hmm. You got to wait for both of them.
No.
I mean, I guess technically each fix triggers a release, but it's true that fixing both of them is a damn good idea.
I mean, if you have two different ways to walk into your building and do bad things, and you close one of them before you close the other, you've still
made
things better.
Yep.
That's a really horrible analogy. I apologize. I've been trying to figure out weird, spooky action at a distance race condition things for several days now, and apparently it leads to really horrible, bad analogies. I'd like to apologize.
Okay, seriously, you're welcome in my house, Sean. Don't be so freaked out.
All right, I'll split the ticket, not necessarily right now, but I will do it.
Yes, definitely.
Yielding back to other stuff.
You're not going to do it right at this instant? You're not going to drop everything? You're not going to sell your helicopter so you have time to do this?
I wish I could sell the helicopter, Sean.
I'm disappointed. I'm so disappointed.
It turns out selling other people's helicopters is a bit of a gray area.
Yeah, especially with... I'll stop.
Okay, all right. So then, a quickie to get out of the way before we turn this over to see if anybody has anything they'd like to bring up or talk about. On the RFC repo, pull request 161, add maybe to iterTools. We are ready for a vote on this. I believe everybody who's on here discussed this last week. So, Sylvan, are you in favor?
As long as it's what I think it is, which is we're actually changing iterTools.
Yes, we're adding maybe to iterTools.
Definitely, yeah.
What we discussed last week when you were here. Yes.
Yep.
Gordon?
Yeah, I'm in favor.
Joe?
Yep.
I Ryan previously gave a thumbs up, so I don't need to. Theo, yes?
Yes.
Okay, so Theo, this is what I'm going to do. No. Well, it depends.
Okay.
This has been accepted. However, I am not merging yet, so that I won't be made to look like a liar for what I told Theo Butler about automating RFC updates before anything gets merged. Okay, so I put a comment. It's been accepted and the comment's on there, but this is not being merged yet.
I look forward to this to, 5 years from now. When we merge this via.
This is not at all what I meant.
Look.
This
look.
Has nothing to
Look, I'll get the automated thing in like 2 to 3 weeks when I'm done moving. Didn't get there. Didn't get there.
Okay.
Not going to be made a liar. There we go. Okay. All right.
I'm just going to put a laughing emoji on that and forget about it.
No. People can't forget about it because it still needs to be done. I'll have to do it. Gonna have to learn some Python to do that. I'm not writing any more things in my wonderful language combination of curl, bash, and JQ. Nope. Python for the things now. Okay, so we are at 5:30, which is the point where when I run these, we stop and ask if anybody has anything they would like to bring up before we continue on. So does anybody have anything they would like to bring up and discuss? Sylvan?
Don't think so. Is there something I'm forgetting?
I don't know. That's what I'm asking. Gordon?
No, not this time.
Joe?
I already brought up my thing about being sad about outlining the field extraction.
Yeah, it's worth being sad about.
Oh, actually, Theo? Sean, I have one thing. Oh. Sorry.
Oh, nice. There he goes. See? Go.
I would like to add the capability to Corral to download binary libraries. this is particularly for Windows, where things like SSL or libcrypto won't necessarily be on someone's system.
So this is in line with the conversation that already happened. I'm pretty sure it happened in public in the Zulip channel, in the tooling one, between Carl and I before he passed away. If not, it might have happened in private DMs and no one ever saw it. But there was the beginning of a conversation. I think there might have been other people involved, of turning Corral into more than just a dependent, like a pure pony dependency fetcher, but having it be able to start to expand Corral to be able to do things like be able to download libraries potentially on a platform dependent kind of way, you know, like Windows, which could get kind of tricky, right? Yeah. And be able to make that a work across the variety of different ones, etc. So I'm in favor of this. However, I think it is a very large amount of work in order to have it so that it's not just like a little dangling Windows appendage. But I'm in favor of this, and it had been discussed as something that we thought would be a good idea for Corral.
I think it's okay. A great idea.
Cool. Yeah, I'll be going ahead with that then.
Okay.
That's a good idea.
Be aware with Corral that the internals of Corral are going to be changing some. There's effectively no unit tests for Corral, and we already had one rather nasty, potentially problematic bug discovered, which with proper unit testing wouldn't have been there, and we can prevent the regression. But there's a number of things in the code base where it was Carl's first large pony code base. And you can see him trying to figure out what the right way to do things is in pony with the affordance that it gives. And in some cases, he made decisions which would make things very difficult to test or verify that they're working. So I'm, as I have time, going through and starting to introduce the ability to make things more testable, which is going to result in some things being rearranged. So just expect that the ground will be shifting around underneath any work that you do for a while, Gordon.
Cool.
If you start picking it up. Yep. You can see like a first tiny additional step for it. There's a PR open, which can't be merged right now, which adds, which does a small amount of redesign in order to be able to add a test which shows the current regression that Nicholas identified with update. And there'd be more. Jonathan Brown is also going to start writing unit tests for different commands in there, and he and I are going to start sussing out based on those what how we want to change the design, as there is definitely some funkiness in the design.
Cool.
Theo, anything you want to bring up?
Not that I can think of right now.
All right. Well then, speaking of Corral, let's see. Let's head over, because we hardly ever get to Corral. Everybody, why don't you head over and open up the issues section for Corral, and we'll just kind of walk through these because it's been a while, and I'm going to kind of cherry pick some out. But if there's anything that you see that's an issue here for Corral that you would like to spend some time you think would be worth discussing during this call for a particular one to go over, because there are a bunch of them because we've never managed to get around to it with our normal schedule of stuff, let me know. There is one issue that I would like to bring up specifically to cover, which is Corral issue 105. Because there are some interesting questions related to it. Yep. This is use dependency format similar to NPM. So for folks who aren't aware, Corral uses JSON to store the information about dependencies, and the particular person to open one where the top level structure is a JSON array. So in theory, you could have two things with the same name, like A as different entries. You could have basically duplicates here for this, for like as they show, for example, two different versions of the same thing being indicated, and it's pretty much currently undefined what would happen. You know, this is undefined behavior. I have no idea what would happen if you did this right now.
It's not just undefined behavior, but in the wild, this produces drastically different results.
Yeah,
including most JSON parsers will pick either the first or the last for any duplicate key inside a duplicate named object, but will merge all other keys. I just want you to think about that for a second. Literally will merge all other keys.
That is horrible.
Yep.
That's a bad option.
So yep. So there's a couple of things that this raises for format related, which is one is that if you're editing those JSON files by hand, you can pretty much do all sorts of stuff to screw things up, right? Yeah. Not just this, but in general. And I'd like to get consensus from everyone that we're not going to make decisions on the basis of, well, somebody could go in and edit something in X type fashion by hand and mess things up. I would like to get an agreement that, you know, that we consider that Corral is the manager of these JSON files, and that it, for example, should be able to validate those files. It, you know, if you want to add something to it, it has commands to add things, it has commands to remove things, and that we shouldn't be designing the file format on the basis of what somebody could do by modifying it by hand and worrying about that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it should be strict output. The question is, are we permissive or strict on input? And my argument would be that since it's a package manager, it should be strict on input. And we could go ahead and modify the JSON parser such that for our JSON parser, if we see any issues like this, we have a mode that allows us to be strict and just bail out and just say, this is malformed, you have duplicate keys, we're done here.
And that mode should probably be the default mode.
Well, that's I think in for most things, strict on output and permissive on input is actually what you want to do. So it's complicated. I don't have a good answer as to what the default should be. But I think specifically for Corral being strict on input, as Sean says, I agree with that.
So
I am alone. Sorry about that.
No,
welcome.
No, I don't think you're necessarily alone. Is there any disagreement with what Sylvan said? Okay. So I do think on the basis of what you said, Sylvan, right?
Yeah.
I think that making this change is a reasonable one to do because it would make it easier to validate for Corral itself to validate that the file is correct and to throw it out, right?
Yep.
And say, sorry, no, there's something wrong with your file, right? Yep. Whereas with the current one, which does it as an array, it is problematic in some fashion.
Yeah.
Right.
There is the issue of what is the canonical name for a package that does not conflict with all other packages.
I think you might have brought up something that I've been worrying about and wondering in relation to this, but you want to expand on that so we can see?
Yeah, sure. So if we go down this scheme, mm-hmm. In some sense, we need a key for each object, right?
Mm-hmm. And, yes.
And one of the things that the Pony module system has tried very hard to do is to say that it is the user's responsibility to name something rather than the implementers. And what that does is it means that you don't have problems with name conflicts amongst separate implementers. But here we have an issue of what does it mean to put something in Corral and make it unique? What is that name that you put in a JSON file that says, I'm talking about package foo, and I know it's foo, and I know nothing else will ever be confused with package foo?
Yes.
In addition to that, one of the things that it tries, that the Pony module system fights very hard to do, is to specifically allow you to use two different versions of the same package in the same program.
Which is something that I touch on in the issue at one point, right? Of at least that part of what is the canonical what does it mean? But what you're talking about as well for what is the name that goes in there? This is something which I've been running into when I've been trying to get main.actor up and running, right? Uh-huh. Where it's like, what is the canonical name for these packages where you'd find this, right? Like, because currently when the documentation generation spits something out, it spits it out as like HTTP, right? Well, I know that HTTP happened to come from blah location, right? With this locator, it's at this, you can start by getting it from this GitHub location, right? But somebody else under a different GitHub location could also have a package which is called HTTP, which could be brought in. And when you're trying to put it into some global registry of documentation, we have a conflict, at least based on how inside of Pony with like the documentation generation, that these names are the same at that level, right? Which is the same problem you're talking about here.
Exactly the same problem.
Yes.
And so what I would say about this problem is that like the unique name for these packages is like the location where you get the source from. So if you get it from GitHub, it's like github.com/thepathtoyourrepository, possibly with a version designator if you want to talk about that. But it's everything you would need to know for Corral to go find that would be the unique identifier for it. And then what I would expect inside the configuration for a project and its dependencies would be, I can create some mapping of, I hereby give this name to, so I have this long name, this, you know, universally unique name where that tells me where the source comes from. And I can give it a local alias within my project that I can then use it at. There's only one place for that mapping, and the way it's guaranteed to be unique is because it's guaranteed within that one file. But it's a mapping that gives references to this universal unique space.
So I like the fetch location. I'm, as some people may know, hugely biased in favor of GitHub because it allows you to do things like put version numbers in your fetch location. But you know, I don't know. What does everybody else think?
There's a problem with that. This was my first thought for this. All right. Part of what Corral allows you to do is it allows you to also have local Git or local Mercurial repos, which are dependencies for this, which would be managed by it, as well as simple local direct. Right, is a form. This was introduced actually originally as an idea by me in Stable because it allows you to have multiple things which exist within the same repository to be able to reference each other without having to do dot 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 /... or whatever, define things, right? And there, what is the universal identifier for those? Because if the location is just is like /home/Sean/foo, right? Well, not everybody's necessarily going to have a foo. And even myself, if I have home/Sean/foo on three different machines, there's no guarantee that foo is going to be unique. So is that file system path that we use there, is that still the global identifier or is it something different?
So I think
so I would say that it should be the file system path, but it should be a relative path. I'm gonna put my foot in the ground here on the idea of putting like absolutely anchored paths like Go does, for example, and say that is like not okay.
That actually made our having those absolute paths made our development experience for Wallaroo way better than.
Everyone has a folder that says home/Sean.
Okay, you're right. Not absolute ones like that. Never mind. Okay, I see what you're saying. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's what I mean is like the universal identifier is that like okay, it's a relative file path. Now you could potentially construct relative paths that are identical to each other but look different from a string perspective, but you can kind of get rid of those if you're clever. So you have your fetch location is either like a remote location that's like fully qualified or a local location that has like a relative path normalized with that being, you know, you can't have two repositories on your machine at the same folder location. So that should still be universally unique even alongside the fetch locations that are remote.
Yeah. So one of the things that NuGet and Packet do, so Packet is an F# package manager built on NuGet or derived from, depends on your point of view, is say that home directories are important. And home directories are a thing that people have, whether they know it or not, on every OS that I can think of right now off the top of my head that's in common use. I'm probably wrong. I'm sure that there's stuff that don't have it. And that lets you say, okay, if you want to start talking about paths that are not relative to my development directory, because my development directory might be anywhere compared to your development directory, but I want to be able to reference a common cache across more than one development project such that I download some package only once but use it in three different development projects, that making things relative to a home directory is not the worst plan. Go ahead.
Keep going.
I was going to say, one of the things that makes .NET packages a pain in the ass for this is that they're huge. They're mammoth. Like, you know, downloading the JSON parser, I think, is like half a gigabyte. And so not duplicating stuff is really, really important. The other side of it is for Pony, the packages are not big. They're quite small. And so it's possible that having completely separate installs per development package is the way to go. And then that is more like Node.js, where we say, actually, you know what? You don't want a cache. You don't want any of this. Everything should be relative to the project directory.
So this would have nothing to do with the locator. The location of the there is a unfinished PR, which Carl was working on. Where Corral within it though has the ability for you to locate where your dependency directory is going to be and to change it actually, right? So that the default right now is that it goes in _repos and _something else in the directory in the same at the same level as your Corral.json, right? However, in the unfinished PR that Carl had was the ability to, for example, locate all of them in your home directory or some other directory where it would go. And I believe his PR was actually going to switch it. The default was going to be to put it in using the apt-dirs package in your home directory as the default. So that if you downloaded version 17 of the HTTP library, that you would, it would be there for use across all of your different projects.
Right. And but that's a little bit different from a fetch directory that is relative, right? I think both things matter.
What do you mean by a fetch directory?
Well, this is this idea of a local file URI to say that you're not actually picking this up off GitHub. It's coming in locally.
Oh, okay. Right.
You can
yes.
make a principal decision about those things should be in some, yeah, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe you could say they're all, they if you're going to do that, fine, but it has to be relative to your home directory, or it has to be relative to the project directory.
So would it be reasonable to say for this universal locator thing right there, that would be the key for this for right now, that it is the thing which would currently go in the locator field of the existing one, which would be like the GitHub URL minus the scheme, so it doesn't have HTTPS or Git in front of it, or you know what your Bitbucket one would be, or your GitLab one, or in the case if it was a local directory, two directories up called foo, it would be ./../foo, and that would be what the key is, right? Which because that is what the current locator is. Does that sound reasonable to folks?
Yeah, I think that goes along with what I was expecting and hoping for.
Does that match up with what you're saying, Sylvan?
Well, it's don't get me wrong, it's totally fine. What I'm wondering maybe and explaining very poorly is that kind of dot notation is really not portable at all across machines. Mm-hmm. And if it were always relative to the project directory, and so you're just not allowed to use things in different projects, or it's always relative to your home directory, then you get stuff that's portable. You start going, it's okay. You just stick stuff in your home directory, you know, home directory /pony/packages. I don't know. .pony/packages probably. That gives you some portability. Maybe we don't even need to make that decision right now. Maybe
I wouldn't call the latter portability. I'd call it like, well, so it depends on whether you're talking about making it at the per project level. Like this is an option that somebody who's maintaining a project can choose, or this is like the way that all local files would work. But it's not really. It's not really portable in the sense of like, well, it's enforcing like these conventions, you know, from the outside on the people using your package even, and enforcing that everyone has directory.
No, I don't think so. Right. That's post-download. This is about local fetch. This is about, I have some packages. I didn't pick them up through GitHub. I didn't pick them up through a distribution mechanism. I have them on my local disk. And our package manager is saying you're allowed to do that.
And if then if
I publish my stuff with a Corral file like that, I'm then demanding that anyone who uses it copy my layout.
Yes. Well, yeah, so I'm okay with it as long as it's something that is like an option available to package developers and not something that we are calling this standard or even best practice. I would frown on that as a best practice.
Sylvan, are you imagining a scenario where there's a pony package which is available only as like a .tar.gz and people have to download it and put it somewhere locally and then you'd be using that with your...
I would argue the damn URL to download that .gz yes. is in some sense the correct fetch location.
Right. So I'm saying
if we're allowing a file URL at all in Corral ever, maybe we don't. If we want to say it's not allowed, you can't do that. That's fine.
But,
too,
what, but well, no, no. So for example, Wallaroo is a monorepo with multiple yep. different applications in it and a library which is shared amongst many different applications. And that's why I introduced the local directory support in in stable, right? Which made its way over into Corral. It, very specifically in that case, was to support monorepo development.
So I think monorepo support is a great example. What a fabulous example. And much better than arbitrary file URLs. And for me, with I would rather say that that's not Corral's problem. The thing is already on disk. What I would love to see is the idea that you can put a marker at some level in your repo that lets the Pony compiler know that if I ask for a package, in terms of use, I just say use thingy, right?
Mm-hmm.
That a valid place to look is from that marker.
That's the Pony path, and that is what I introduced into stable and what's there in Corral, because they're managing the Pony path.
Yeah, the Pony path environment variable says here are the paths where
I know about
for,
that one.
Yeah,
I remember implementing it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean that's why the local file one exists, right? In the monorepo, that's why I introduced that into stable. The other thing where Carl discussed what he was using it for was when he was developing more than one thing in conjunction with one another, right?
Yeah.
Like here, I'm working on my package, and I also need to make changes to this other package in order to support it. So I'm going to use this local thing for now, right? As the indicator, and Corral is managing the Pony path for me in order to do this. But before this would actually be published, it would be changed, right?
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's a totally valid use case too. I was going to bring up is temporary use that's not intended for other people, right? You don't care if it's portable. You're like, hey, there's a bug in this package on GitHub. I need to clone it locally and fix their bug and make sure it works with my application. And so I have it in this local path, this ... gets me there. And then, eventually I switch back to the real one once they fix the package remotely.
Right.
I think it should be bad. It should be bad practice to have anything. I think we can agree that it should be bad practice to have anything with a ... as like a permanent solution to a problem.
Unless it's a monorepo.
For the monorepo, I would expect that to be kind of a, it wouldn't be a ... I thought it would just be a ... like it's a local relative that not going up.
No, because further, it depends
on. Oh, I see. Never mind.
Corral files go.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So it shouldn't reach outside the repository is the thing.
Yes.
For best practice. And it shouldn't, I would argue, shouldn't be absolute or tied to some like home folder thing either as a best practice, because then you're requiring, for example, anyone who wants to download and use Wallaroo, you'd be requiring them to put it totally in a particular location before it would work.
No, that's exactly what I want to avoid. That's why I like this grounding this in the monorepo use case. So in a monorepo use case,
I'm going to drop a monorepo use case link into the chat right now for how we did it, right?
That's great.
It's using old state. It's a stable one because Wallaroo is still using stable, but that's how it was done. Right.
Awesome.
Yeah, that makes sense to me because it's part of the repository.
The thing I
was trying to avoid is like what you have to do in Go, where it's like I can't do anything in Go unless I have like the repository cloned to a specific name. I have to clone it to like github.com/foo/bar. And I can't have it anywhere else on my, I can't organize things by like which company I'm working for. I like they all have to be a part of this common Go path. And it's just like a big enforced kind of mess.
Yeah, I totally agree.
But this is not that.
Yes. I have another question, which is it crazy to say you should only have one Corral file for a repo?
So Carl very explicitly built it so that you could have multiple Corral files for a repo, so that you could do the monorepo type thing, and you could also have multiple different bundles within a repo. There's not a direct tying of a of just one bundle per repo. He very much wanted to allow the, I haven't really fully thought through the ramifications of that, of what it means for uploading like documentation for things and everything. Yeah. But it was very heavily part of the design is in the design docs that he wrote up.
Okay.
To allow for those things.
Okay. So I got to pay attention to that. Okay.
And that is definitely something where I need to read up more on the design stuff, because he put a lot of thought into it. And, you know, I am doing some work in this area, and I'm trying to round up other people to do work on Corral. And, you know, Carl spent a long time thinking about the problems and looking at different dependency managers. I think that what he came up with was very principled, right? And I don't want to screw that.
I feel like I'm coming at this a little half-assed, and that's not
good. Yeah, there are certain things that I just have not touched at all, and people are like, well, what about blah, blah, blah? And I'm like, well, I know that Carl touched on that in his design docs, and I haven't had a chance to read them, so I'm not going to go anywhere near that right now. Just like that, that's my answer, you know? There's some principal design doc stuff that I need to learn before I can really comment.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. Okay.
Okay, so let's see. All right. Okay. During sync, we discussed this and decided a couple of things. One, we will make the breaking format change to Corral to move from an array of things to an object. Let's see, 1A, the unique key be the item that is currently in the locator. Name, field as well, and 2, making decisions, assume that Corral controls edits to a Corral.json, not worry about editing, introducing errors. Strict in parsing JSON and that anything that isn't normal style. Who has the nice nature sounds in the background?
Oh, sorry, that's probably the kids practicing flute. Sorry about that.
No, it's fine. It's been kind of
very soothing.
Very soothing. Help wanted.
A lot of birds out there, so if those are, that might be them as well.
Okay, I added a note to this, and I updated the labels to be enhancement, good first issue, and help wanted. Pretty much basically, when we introduced those labels previously, help wanted was one of them. I would ask everybody else to use help wanted in the same way that I have been, which is basically if we have any issue where anybody who's not a member of the Pony Core team could assist, then please do add help wanted to it. If it's an issue where it very specifically needs to be done by a specific individual, then do not add help wanted to it. Right. Or some group of people. If it was like Sylvan, if it was you and I, right?
Yeah.
It had to be you or I, then we don't put help wanted on it. As a way to indicate to people, hey, no, we got this one. But most things would probably be help wanted. And then we also have good first issue, because although I think that this might be this might be a little involved, right? In order to make the necessary changes, it's not like there's anything particularly really hard and difficult about this particular thing.
Yeah, it's pony programming, not crazy type system hackery.
Yeah, and it might be involved. I don't even know how much work it is, you know, but it might be a little involved. Okay, So we are at the end of time for this week. If folks have time, if they could look over the Corral issues, there's a lot of them in there, and Corral is going to be a very important tool in the ecosystem. If you can see if there's anything in there that you think is particularly worth talking about and bring it up at a future sync, that would be awesome. Or just, you know, start a conversation on the particular issue for it. There's a number of them there. I think Theo and I have been the most active on those, probably because we've used Corral more than probably anybody else on the call and run into all sorts of fun issues for the state that it's at right now. Does anybody have anything before we stop recording? All right, then. I'm going to stop recording now. Thank you, everyone, for coming, and see you next week.